Barry Gibbs was wrongfully convicted of murder in 1986 and sentenced to 20 years to life in prison. After serving nearly 19 years, his conviction was overturned when questions were raised about how his case had been handled by Louis J. Eppolito, one of the so-called mafia cops. Just this past week, New York City agreed to pay Mr. Gibbs $9.9 million in compensation, the largest personal settlement in the city's history. I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Gibbs back to our show today. Hi.
Good afternoon. How are you?
First of all, congratulations. I've always wondered how much money it would take to compensate for so many lost years. Did you ever think about that?
I did. And I came out with a number that I felt $1 million a year. This way, they would have enough money to provide for themselves and the things that they, you know, they need to provide for.
Well, you got half of that.
You can't make up for all that time, no matter how much money you have. But the idea is to live a normal life. You need money. And, you know, for suffering and for the pain and for losses and, you know, how much can you put a price on it? I feel $1 million a year for every person who was proven innocent, you know, should be awarded for as many years as they did.
Well, you got about half of that. You were here on the show in 2005 when you were released from prison. And what have you been doing in the 5 years since? Have you had any money to live on?
No, I was living on welfare. I was living on food stamps. And I was living day to day. It was rough. You know, I had to borrow some money from a couple of people. And, you know, I had to make it last. You know, and I had to worry about where I was going out to eat, how much it would cost me, and, you know. And now with the settlement that I have, you know, I'm just putting it on a credit card until the settlement comes in.
Because you don't know when the money's actually going to be put into your account?
Well, I heard within 90 days. It's got to be structured, and I'm working with financial consultants and people involved. And until I get a structure, you know, that'll fit my needs, then we'll be all right.
Was there anything positive to be said about your experience in prison?
Positive?
I mean, was it all just terrible, terrible, terrible every minute?
No, it was life-changing. Every day was a different day. You know, I don't want to think about how it was and how it is now, but it wasn't every day I had to worry, but I did worry. And, you know, it's hard being in a cell by yourself, locked up, caged up, and being told when to eat, what time it is. You know, it's hard. It's a different way of life,
For our listeners who are unaware of your story, let's go over the basics of the original case. You were accused of murdering a 27-year-old prostitute who was strangled and left near the Belt Parkway. Did you know her?
I know her, yes. I had met her, and that was it. It was in passing.
So why do you think the cops saw you as their prime suspect from the start?
I don't know. Yeah, Eppolito has all of those questions.
What was your reaction when they first called you in for a police lineup?
My reaction was I was innocent, so I'm going to follow the instructions of the police officers, and I'm going to try to cooperate and give them everything I can.
Which is a natural reaction.
I would think so. For a layman, yes. You know, for a person who does, you know, is not a criminal, you know, and the first time this happens, it's a shock. I knew I was framed. Once I got picked out of the lineup, I knew I was framed.
Well, people are often advised not to even talk, innocent or not, until they have a lawyer. How soon before you had a lawyer?
I didn't need a lawyer until after they found me in the lineup as the perpetrator, and that I needed a lawyer.
And did you get a decent lawyer?
Well, I got an 18B lawyer in the city or the state, you know, award you a lawyer. And I said to the lawyer, I says, listen, I didn't do the crime. And if you don't believe me, you know, he's, you know, then I don't need you as my attorney. And he said to me, it doesn't matter whether I believe you or not. It's just that I represent you to the best 100%, 100% or something. I just didn't like the way he said it, and I didn't feel comfortable with it, so I said, you know what, let me go hire a lawyer. And that's what I did. I hired an attorney.
Although he didn't get you freed.
No, he thought he was going to win the case also. It cost me a lot of money, but, you know, I had to go into debt for that.
How long after you were sent to prison did the Innocence Project at the Cardozo School of Law take on your case?
I wrote them in 1992 originally about DNA and that I had it in my case, and I was denied in 1992. I was sent a letter that due to the overwhelming influx of cases, we cannot accept your case at the time. And then in 1999... I was desperate, and I had an old friend that I grew up with, and he was an attorney, and his partner knew somebody in the Innocence Project, and they started handling my case. They had my case from 1999 until 2005, whereas they still were unable to collect the evidence of my case.
There are many cases around the country like yours, as we have learned, that don't get overturned, despite strong evidence that they might have been wrongful convictions. What do you think enabled your case eventually to be different, even though it dragged on for so long?
I was very surprised when Eppolito got arrested in Vegas, and I heard it on the radio.
So that was a turning point, obviously.
That was the turning point. The attorney that represented me got in touch, Barry Sheck, who was in charge of the Innocence Project. I called the office there, and he said to me that he heard the news and he's going to see what he can do. And I said, okay, fine. And I waited around in my cell. And I think it was maybe a month or two later, two DEA agents from the Federal Bureau came to visit me upstate. And they asked me about the case. And I told them everything, you know, everything I knew. And then they went and reinvestigated the case, and they were the ones that eventually freed me.
We discussed that when you were here in 2005. By the way, that interview, it can also be heard. It's available on our show page at WNYC.org. Detective Eppolito led the investigation against you, and he was eventually arrested on federal racketeering charges in 2005. He was accused of being paid by members of the Lucchese crime family to pass along information about police investigations and also in taking part in killings for the mob. But it was your case was not part of that. It was just that he came under suspicion at that point?
I don't understand what you mean. He came under suspicion.
Well, suddenly everything else that he had done, even though none of those things had to do with your case specifically, I would assume that everything he had done suddenly came under a cloud.
Well, we were supposed to go to trial. I was supposed to go to trial. I made a settlement without going to trial. The Eppolito knew what he did, you know, and he was responsible.
But why do you think he went after you? Just simply to get a conviction?
I have no idea. I have no idea. From what I understood was, according to my attorneys, is that he was covering up for a mob associate who came into the precinct with his hair dyed, right? And that's what I understood.
So in the lineup, of course, he had the wrong color hair.
No, that guy never showed up for the lineup. They feel that Eppolito did the mob a favor, and they let this guy go when they went to find me. That's what my lawyers felt.
You attended a sentencing hearing for Mr. Eppolito and his partner, Stephen Caracampa, and you got thrown out of the court?
I did, because Eppolito was talking about his family, you know, and how they're going to suffer if he gets, you know, convicted of these crimes and stuff. And I couldn't take it anymore because he was, like, whining. And I yelled out, Eppolito, remember me, Gibbs? I had a family, too. And they threw me out of the courtroom.
You had been a postal worker before the conviction.
19 years or 20 years, something like that.
What's life been like for you since? Have you reconnected with the members of your family?
Well, let's talk about the post office. I'm not going to be able to receive Social Security. I'm not going to be able to receive Medicare because of what was done to me. I had to take my money out of my retirement fund from the post office, and once I did that, I lost everything. So I don't have medical, I don't have enough money paid into Social Security to receive Medicare, to receive Social Security like everybody else. So the money that I was awarded, now I'm going to need for, you know, medical care.
Yeah, but you had 5 years of no coverage at all.
I had 5 years of Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And once they found out that I didn't put enough money into the system, because when I worked in the post office, they had their own retirement. Eventually, they put in for Social Security, but I didn't have enough quarters because I lost my job when I got arrested.
Can you vote?
I can vote, yes.
So all of your legal rights have been reinstated.
That's correct.
When you came out, were you shocked by all the technological changes that had occurred, or did you know about cell phones and computers and the internet and all of that?
I didn't even know that you could put a card in for the subway. I thought they still had tokens, you know? That's how long it was. I mean, a lot of things changed out here. A lot of things were overwhelming for me when I first got out. I was delusional. I saw a psychiatrist. I still see a psychiatrist. I'm on medication. It hasn't been easy, but it's been accepted, you know? I have hard times sometimes.
I've spoken to some other prisoners or about other prisoners, and one guy just didn't want to leave a room because even though he had been exonerated and given a settlement, he just didn't feel comfortable being outside what was the equivalent of a little cell. Another guy was afraid to let people know that he had married somebody because he was afraid that they would go after her. After all, he had been a victim of an unjust accusation, spent time in prison. You now have a fiance.
Yes,
you being
I do.
Able to work all of that out?
Yes, she's very understanding. She's very loving. She's caring. And she's a good friend. She really is a good friend.
What about New York? New York was a place that most people feel comfortable, most New Yorkers feel comfortable in, your native New Yorker. But for you, it has to have been a place of great trauma. Are you comfortable
I loved
coming
New York
back?
At one time. At one time, I loved New York. After I got arrested and I came out now, I don't like it anymore. I don't like New York. I don't like Brooklyn. I don't like Queens. I want to move. I want to reach out, you know. I want to just leave this area and start a new life. That's what I want to do.
Do you have any thoughts on what can be done to prevent similar wrongful convictions in the future?
I think that they got to get honest and legitimate people in the business, you know, and not power, crazy, hungry people, psychopaths. I've seen so much, you know, going on that it's scary. It's really scary.
Well, who are you saying is a psychopath? You mean the prosecutors and the
they're all saying they got egos. Everybody's got an ego. They got they tell you got a right to an appeal after you lose a trial. So you think there's hope, and then you see that it's denied, and then they got the Court of Appeals, and it's a rubber stamp system. They go to the Court of Appeals, denied. District court denied, circuit court denied, certiorari denied. Everybody denies everybody. But even if you got the issues, they even put down when your case is accepted because of questions of law that have to be answered. Okay, so if they had to be answered then, how come they still haven't been answered now? I mean, really, what kind of system am I in? The whole system, to me, is messed up. Once they get you in, they lock the door, that's it, they throw away the key.
You were sentenced 20 to life. Couldn't you have been paroled before? You spent almost 19 years in prison.
You must do the minimum of 20 years, and then you have life at the end. In my particular case, I would have been doing life because I would have to go to the parole board after my 20 years, and if I have no remorse, the parole board's going to hit me with 2 years. I'm a victim here.
Because you said you didn't commit the crime.
That's correct.
And as far as they're concerned, that means that you're still
in denial,
not taking responsibility.
Yeah, I'm in denial. Is that amazing? That's the system.
Well, it seems to me that the system was in denial for a long time as far as you were concerned.
That's it.
Has anybody ever been proposed as the possible killer?
Yeah, they believe it was one guy who was in the mob that was from organized crime who did the crime. They believe that. That's it. Because the guy came into the precinct the next day with dyed hair.
Just one word of advice. If a guy named Bernie Madoff comes to you and says, I can really help you with your money, don't take his advice, okay?
No, I definitely won't.
But that has to be something you really should be concerned about, what you're going to do with this
money. I am. That's why I got a very good team behind me, and I'm not worried. And my son is involved, which I have a great relationship with him and his wife. And everything is great, the grandkids, everything.
Barry, thank you so much for coming back again. If you want to hear the 2005 interview we did, it's on our show page at WNYC.org. And congratulations, $9.9 million. It's been long coming. But
long coming, is right. Long, long time coming. It was long.